Oxley, reel 5.
Apart from the sort of defences we've talked about so far, like trenches, sandbagging, wiring, was there any other methods of fortifying positions you took up?
No, that was the main idea of fortification was of sandbags. That was the main idea of defences.
Let's talk about ground conditions.
Yes.
Not the trenches themselves, which we've already discussed, but the actual condition of the ground in various parts of the front in which you served. Was there much variation in the actual ground conditions in the various sectors you served in?
Oh yes, definitely so. In the Ypres salient, that is an area from Ypres itself onto the Passchendaele Ridge, it was decidedly different to the area which we took over in the Kemmel area. In other words, we could actually dig a trench in the Kemmel area or dig a post without being embarrassed by the infiltration or the water coming into the trench when you were digging.
Apart from the trenches,
Yeah.
if you were moving across open ground, were there many problems caused by the condition that the ground was in?
In the Kemmel area, there was what should we say, inconvenience whatsoever. It was quite as if one was walking over normal country, except that you had an occasional shell hole here and there. The reason for that was that the Kemmel area hadn't been devastated until Ludendorff had tried to get the Channel ports in the April 1918.
Well, tell me about the other areas where the ground conditions were worse. What sort of condition were they in your memory?
My memory is of the conditions in the Ypres salient was the only way of getting around was means of the duckboards. And they were all determined by, as regards, for map reference, they were given numbers. You'd be number one track, number two track, number three track, number five track, etc.
Now, in moving across open country, what was your biggest danger? Caused by the ground conditions.
The biggest danger, that's again precise to the Ypres salient, was slipping off these duckboards into the quagmire or a shell hole. There was a lot of casualties whereby a man had been sucked down into the bog and not never been able to get out
Give
again.
me some examples of incidents that you remember occurring like this.
Yes. We had occasion to go from one particular area to another, and it was only by getting from these posts to another was over these duckboards. It was in the dark, and we'd lost, in my particular platoon, we lost three men who had slipped off the duckboards in the dark, and we couldn't stop to help them out, and we simply lost them. They were actually casualties. Was constituted the unidentified number, which we
Did you ever fall in a shell hole yourself?
did, yes.
What was the feeling?
On one particular occasion, I was with the American forces on Kemmel, and I thought, well, it was only my duty to try and do a bit carrying up the rations. They were in sandbags, which carried over one shoulder, and I slipped off a duckboard into a shell hole, but fortunately the water only came up to my waist, and I was pulled out. I don't know who pulled me out, but I was pulled out, and my clothes simply dried on me.
You're giving me a very cheerful impression of conditions on the Western Front, which I know isn't the case.
No.
I don't get much impression of the sort of filth and the muck and the being sucked down.
Yeah.
You're making it sound a bit more agreeable than it was, I think.
I think being young and having no domestic responsibilities This is rather indelible in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe for me a typical day in the trenches? Just run through from daybreak to dusk and describe what the routine would be when you weren't involved in a sort of major offensive or anything.
Yes. Well, we'll take, for example, when we were on Kemmel, a reasonably dry post, you see. We'd relieve the particular post at night time, naturally. You'd be there until daybreak, and immediately daybreak asserted itself, you had the order, or I would give an order, stand to, and everyone would stand to on the fire step for a few minutes. Then you'd give the order to stand down, and you'd post a sentry, and it'd be his duty to keep an eye through a periscope in the main, which would be attached to his bayonet, and he could look through it onto the periscope and look over the top. Naturally, he would not be able to look over the top in normal conditions, otherwise it's inviting a sniper's bullet. But these small periscopes were able to stick in the top of your bayonet, and the rifle propped up, and you could look into the periscope and see the territory in front of you. And they would be on about, each sentry would be on about 2 hours. And the NSO would have to see that he was relieved. During the daytime, that would be the only form of duty to do, would be relief of the sentries. But night time, that would be the time for action, where you would go out to repair wire, or if you were, the instructions were to see where the enemy were, you would probably detail off or ask to volunteer to find out where the enemy were, probably make a raid, which I was involved in one particular time, to make a raid on the post.
Did the routine in the reserve and support trenches vary?
They did, yes, very much so.
What was the routine there?
The routine in the reserve trenches and support trenches was to convey the rations to the front line. That was the main duty.
I see. In the first place, tell me about the way ration parties were organised and how they worked.
Yes, ration parties would stem from what we call the horse lines. That would be the battalion headquarters. And from there they'd go out to the company, various company headquarters, from the company headquarters to the various platoons, and from the platoons to the sections. And you'd have special fatigue parties detailed off to take these rations up. And they were apportioned from the company, from the battalion headquarters to the company headquarters, and they would be apportioned to particular men in the company and the platoons and the sections. And the rations would be conveyed up by the fatigue parties in sandbags.
So you're in a ration party now which is about to provide supplies to the front line.
Yes.
How would you do it, actually? Where would you pick the stuff up? Where would you deposit it? How would you carry it?
Well, being in a front line troop, an infantryman, I would take my instructions from my company headquarters, and then I would be detailed by the company sergeant major, Corporal Oxley. We want you to take rations up to such and such a post, and there would be a guide here from this particular post to guide you up to this post, you see. And you'd have, say, two or three men with these rations, and then you'd make your way as best you could to the particular post with Matt Mayo. That's the letters, water in the petrol cans, and the food in the sandbag.
How did you carry the water?
That was in petrol cans and simply carried out by hand.
I see. Now, once you arrived at the front line with your load, how was it distributed and issued to the men?
Yeah. That would be given to the non-commissioned officer in charge of the post, and it would be his duty then to share it out to the men, according to how many were there.
So each man would receive an individual issue?
He would, yes. Yeah.
Now, what food and drink did you usually get in the front line?
Usually it would be enough bread to give a man a fourth of the loaf. That would be a medium-sized loaf, and he'd have a fourth of it, a quarter of it, to last him one particular day. Sometimes it would be a confectionery come up in the ration party, which I had experience of, sweets and a tobacco ration, cigarettes, and occasionally a delicacy, which would be was termed the McConaughey. That was a kind of a stew business in a circle of tin.
Well, what was your normal day-to-day food? It wasn't just bread.
Oh, no. I was telling you, this McConaughey was a delicacy.
When you say a delicacy, it suggests you didn't have it very often.
Not very often, no.
So what did you normally have?
Bully beef, yes.
You hadn't mentioned that.
I was coming to that. Bully beef, yes.
Yes. And how much of an issue would you get?
The bully beef be one particular tin, which is one can get to the shop today, give you an idea, but it's a similar size. And the favourite was Fray Bentos. That was a favourite. It was recognised as the best. That did vary.
And how much bully beef would one man get for each day?
He had one to last him the next day.
I see, yes.
Of course, you must take into consideration that oftentimes ration parties couldn't get to the trench, you see. It wasn't a matter of fact that you're going to get the rations every day. You couldn't rely on it. It was according to what was happening in the back areas.
Now, once you've got the food and the water in the front line, how did you actually prepare the food?
Well, it wasn't actually much to prepare. If you had this McConaughey come up, which naturally necessitated being heated, there was an issue to each, not individually, but to a section, a little thing called a Tommy's cooker. And that was a tin of wax impregnated with probably alcohol, with a kind of wick inserted in the centre of it. And you could light that, it would burn with a slow flame. And you could put that under your tin of McConaughey and warm it up.
And if you wanted to have a brew up, you'd do that the same way?
Yes, but they didn't last very long, these Tommy's cookers. So one had to improvise. And the method which I come to learn was to scrounge or forage dry wood and cut it up to minute splinters so as not to cause a smoke, and light that to form a kind of a miniature fire, as it were, get some kind of heat, and then you brew up tea. And if you had, we always had kind of had tea, but never always had the milk, and that came up in the condensed tin form.
What did you use for, with this wood, what did you use for a fireplace?
With the amount of spare tins around, and old tins, it wasn't difficult to make a kind of a shelter. There was always plenty of tins around, and old petrol tins which one could open up with your jackknife. You had a special implement at the end of the jackknife, which was a kind of an old-fashioned tin opener kind of thing.
Fine. As regards food, what was the normal eating routine? I mean by that, you got your food issued to you, and you had to make it last a day. Well, when would you have your meals?
There's no actual specified time. You simply ate it when you wanted to.
Was there a usual routine, though?
No routine, no. No routine as far as...
Well, what did you personally do?
I simply took it as I wanted it. As I say, there was no particular routine of time factor.
Did you get rum issues in the front line?
Not in the front line, no.
How frequently did you get them?
Very infrequent. Very infrequent.
When rum was available, how was that issued and shared out?
It was shared out before you went into to the front line. Usually it was given to a platoon sergeant. It was his responsibility to share it out.
How would you do that?
It would share it out from earthenware jug, which I think that was the special container for these things, and it would be poured into your little mess can, mess tin. That was the name of the thing, the mess tin. Every soldier was issued with a mess tin about the size of my two parts put together, and it had a detachable lid to it with a metal handle.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, we've been talking so far about